and welcome to The Herd Has Spoken, a podcast brought to you by Muskox Men's Apparel. Episode number 9, Jake Siegel. Good friend of mine, good friend of Muskox, and most importantly, someone that's doing fantastic things out there on road and off road, as Jake and I talk about in this episode. So on the road, Jake is a tech CEO, sold his first company to Ford Motor Company, building and growing his second company now, Tome Software, doing a lot of exciting things. Off the road, Jake is a huge cyclist, a huge skier. He's frankly the best skier that I know, and we have even featured Jake skiing down the Rocky Mountains in a Muskox flannel in some of our ads. So we certainly are big fans of Jake on the slopes. And Jake and I had a great discussion on a range of things, as you'd expect, talking about business and the importance of being able to manage your time in an intelligent way, and also the importance of getting the hell away from business and great ways to carve off some time. So really enjoyed my conversation with Jake. I hope you guys do as well. So no further ado, the CEO of Tome Software, Jake Siegel. Jake, well, let's go ahead and dive right into it. I think we're fired up to have you here. And I want to go back in time a little bit. We'll get into all your great professional accomplishments and all the cool stuff you're doing on the bike and on skis. But I want to go back to this moment where you were selling your company, Livio, to Ford.
Okay.
You walked in to sign those papers with flip-flops and a t-shirt, and you were surrounded by a room of suits. Take us back to that moment and describe what that was like.
Well, it was a really hot day. So it wasn't in the winter. We'll put it out there. For me, it was, that moment was a sense of opening opportunities for investors and other entrepreneurs in Southeast Michigan. And it was the first beginning of like the first wave post-dot-com bubble of tech transactions. So for our team, it was a win, and it meant that while we were doing what we're doing, which is getting apps connected to cars, it was just that we had this right. Like, we were with the right team. And I mean, I just can't say enough about like working with the Ford team and how great they were. And they still are. And the Livio team and many of the guys are still there. People are still there. A lot of careers were started at Livio for people. So being able to open that. So for that moment, it was really an opportunity to reflect on my career and what I've done. And then quickly realized it was about the team and going there. So the flip-flops part, I probably had a do-over. I should have put some shoes on. But, you know, at the same time, you always got to have the marble floored lawyers doing what they do. So got to send lots of love to those guys.
All right. So I get it, man. Like, team effort, great moment to reflect on what you did. It was a culmination of a lot of things. I get it. But what I want to know is, I mean, was there just a little bit of you that was just like, F you to the corporate culture, not of like Ford, because obviously like they're acquiring you and that's part, but just like, I'm an entrepreneur, man. And I am the guy that has the assets that you want. And I'm going to show up and dress how I want to. I mean, was there any moment of like, was that a liberating feeling at all? I just want to dig into like the emotion of the entrepreneur walking into
it. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you, no, that's not it, but probably not for the reasons that you and the viewers are thinking about this. Mossman and I were wondering like what to wear, and we decided we were going to wear what we normally wear on a given day and not make it any other different. And it was not like we wanted to maintain business as usual, and business as usual at 3136 Hilton was shorts and flip-flops when it's going to be 80 degrees outside. So what I think it was, for me, like the only moment I had of kind of like a little bit of like, I told you so, was for all of the investors and groups of investors, and just a lot of them are just straight tire kickers and bozos. And there are some great investors and great institutions out there, but in order to find them, you got to get through a lot of just a lot of waste of time. And you just remember all the people that said you will fail or this is dumb because.
Thank God they did too, right?
Yeah, I got to tell you that pissed me off more than, and you know, I wanted, like, this is a line from Moneyball, at least the movie Moneyball. I said, like, I hate losing more than I want to win. And there is a part of me that's like that. But I'll tell you that to the question about like that feeling of like, screw you corporate, it was not at all like that. But I will say that it was screw you to people that don't want to believe that you can change the industry and in some small way change the world. And I think too, specifically, like you always hear about Silicon Valley say, make the world a safer place. We were on the bleeding edge of technology that allowed you to keep your phone connected to your car. Prior to this, it was the aux in cable and like the headphone jack.
Right.
For millennials, we used to have headphone jacks on cars. And you plug your phone, or actually your phone, your iPod or your MP3 player or CD player in the car. And the part that a lot of people don't know, I don't even know if I've ever shared this with anyone outside of my close friends, but there are a lot of lives that were probably saved because people had their phones connected to their cars and they weren't texting, changing their Spotify playlist or Pandora playlist while driving. And for me, and it's such a big part of my life now is involving with increasing safety for bicyclists and scooters and making vehicles safer to own. That was a big part of it. It's like, you can't force people to not use their phone while they're driving. You still can. I mean, we all know that, but there would not have been CarPlay and Android Auto if Ford did not do Ford Sync, and we were a part of the Ford Sync story, but Ford led that charge, and there's probably a lot of lives saved because of that move that Ford made, and we're a big part of that.
Jake, you mentioned something that I think is really powerful, which is hating to lose and wanting to prove people wrong when they're telling you you're not going to be able to be successful with this. I want to go back to, you're a program manager at Delphi, big automotive supplier for people who aren't familiar with Delphi. And you decided to go and start your own company, Olivio Internet Radio. But what I really want to know is, what made you believe in yourself to go and start and create something new? Because I know so many people out there who are brilliant and who work so hard at things, but it's a really hard thing to get to that point where you're going to make that big bet on yourself. And so what gave you that inspiration? Because now it's easy, right? You're on your second company, you're making things happen, but man, for not that, no, it never gets easy, right?
But it's familiar. It's familiar pain that you know that you can go into a deep well of pain and suffer because you've been there before and you know you're going to end up on the right side. But
it's a crucible, makes you stronger. But what at that moment, you know, gave you the strength and the confidence to believe in yourself?
Well, it's really the support team around me. And I know it sounds such, I feel like I'm like at the end of like a professional sports game doing the post game, you know, thank God, thank the team, you know, a great O-line, got it. You know, I mean, yeah, that you're always going to get that, but let me be more specific. So married, no kids, and my wife was working and gainfully employed. And when I was working at Delphi, the program we were working on, which is satellite radio. At the time, there were two brands of satellite radio. You had XM satellite radio and Sirius satellite radio. They've then merged, and now it's, you know, one. That happened in February of 2017. So when we started up our company, I had a few months at the end of that merger when Delphi said, you have the option to move into another gig or we'll pay you severance. And I was 25, I think, at that point. And for me, like getting a 3-month severance felt like I had an eternity to figure it all out. And it was leading up to in October. I had a few months to wrap up some loose ends. And you know, there at one point, I remember one of the ladies that I was working with. She's awesome. She's like, you know, what are you doing here? Like, you don't need to be here 40 hours a week. And you know, you just get your job done and you know, do whatever you want. Because I was looking for more stuff to do. And that's when I learned I had 3 months basically while I was getting a paycheck to finish things off while I'm ramping up with the new company, Livio. And then I had a severance package and then I had some money saved up and it's something I wanted to do. So it really was the support team. So my wife, my dad, who's an entrepreneur, and my grandfather who passed where I was born, but he was an entrepreneur as well. So being a third generation entrepreneur gave me some confidence. Always been a hustler, so I knew I could do it. And then last but not least is the Consumer Electronics Show, which happens in January every year when it's not a pandemic. And that I knew that you can hustle and get business done there. So I felt like if there was a time and a place to do this, I call it the TMP, time and place, that and a lot of things in business and in life, and probably talk about a little more on this discussion. But that it was really it. It was the team, and I felt like if there was a time for me to go for it, go for it. And at the time, I had some job opportunities, Logitech, maybe a job offer to be the product manager for their like one of their consumer divisions. I had a job opportunity to go be a buyer at Best Buy, and that's good money back, at least it was back then, out in Minneapolis. I had a job offer for a company on the East Coast that was making some consumer electronic audio products. So I had some other ops, and I'll tell you what makes it hard is when you have options to make 3 or 4 times your salary and you're 25 years old. And I mean, that's big money. I mean, you're not sitting on savings typically for most of us in our 20s. It's tough to say no to that. And the last thing I'll say about this, Brad, is that when I first told people I was starting a company, they didn't even know how to spell entrepreneur. This is 15 years ago, entrepreneur was not even like a thing. Okay. At least in Michigan,
it was code for, I don't have a job is what it was.
I remember I was still DJing in nightclubs back then. And I missed that. I loved it. It was, I had more hair and I was thinner and it was awesome. And, when I was doing that, I remember I was telling my buddy, he's like, and his buddy's girlfriend is, pretty good looking girl, is like, so you're unemployed. I was like, no, I'm an entrepreneur. So do you get paid? I'm like, no, then you're unemployed. And that was it. I think that like that kind of encapsulates being an entrepreneur. I'm 39 now, and you know, doing something at that time, it's way different. It was not cool. There were not entrepreneurship programs in most colleges. Now, maybe if you're sitting here in the East Coast or West Coast watching this, you're like, oh, we've always been doing this, fine. But I tell you that for most of the country, it was not the same thing. Facebook wasn't even really popping back then. So, I mean, it's just a different time, you know?
For sure. For sure. And pro tip to the guys tuning in here that are on dating apps, if you put entrepreneur on there, it's still flashing red flag for ladies to think that you don't have a job. So even in 2020, let's keep that off dating profiles, even though it is more accepted that people get entrepreneurship and think entrepreneurship is really cool. I love this sort of the confidence in yourself that you've always had. And I think that's one of the things that makes you really successful, is that you make so many decisions so quickly, and you make, you know, a lot of good decisions. I mean, we all make bad decisions. I think that's one of the things that, people who maybe haven't started up their own thing, it's like, hey, the decision is what's most important, not necessarily always the perfect decision or the right decision. But I know one of the things, and you actually started a new blog for yourself, OCD CEO, but I want to hear from you a little bit about how being really particular has helped you in being a CEO, being an entrepreneur. You've got, you know, a 20 person organization that's doing a lot of really cool things around hardware, software, interface. Mm-hmm. But I also want to hear, you know, how you think it's hindered you, and where do you think it's something that you really have to check? Because I know for me, my greatest strengths are my greatest weaknesses, and I'd love to kind of hear the double edged sword for you as that self-described OCD CEO.
Oh yeah. Well, definitely check the link, for the blogger, site. But, I think that you gotta be yourself, and you hear this at an early age, and you gotta do you. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. So how I do me, like that's like, or like what some of the things that make me very unique that can be a double-edged sword is being brutally honest all the time. I don't have the capability to make things up and try to remember like things that I'll stretch or try to make somebody feel better by saying something, like in business at least. So I'll just tell people my brutal honest truth, and being that direct is not, I mean, that is a double-edged sword, you know, like you're saying, Brad. I think that for having a process that you can live by and get comfort. So even, I mean, habits, whether they're good or bad, they're almost always comfortable. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone.
Thing.
Yeah. So I think that making your own habits and finding comfort in those habits, it's awesome. So as like a very much a obsessive compulsive person, I love keeping lists. I love checking off things off the list. And on the flip side of it, if I get flustered and I don't have things on a list, whether it's a post-it or my digital to-do list, I start moving things from one list to another and then capturing it. Sometimes I'll just call bankruptcy on a document or a list and say, that's it. You know, this is too much and I need to start fresh because it's stressing me out. But having a habit and knowing that, for example, one of my habits is zero inbox, and it doesn't mean I have to say yes to everything, but I want to make sure that I respond to every email that comes in within 24 hours. And I might respond saying I'll get to this later, or I'm not going to respond to this, or I don't have time to do this. So being responsive is a habit that I got into at an early age. And that I think about, what would people say about me that I do business with, that are my friends or my family? And frankly, when I was younger, a lot of things I didn't really like that people would be saying about me. And my best friends told me these things. And they were things that weren't things I was born with. So it's like, these are things that I can change and I can improve on. And now I'm really focused on helping and being a helper and making sure that people, we call it a tell them the 1, 2, 3, they know what they're doing, why they're doing, and have the tools they need to do their jobs. But for me, it's about having that habit routine. And the only downside of this whole thing is that, like I said, bad habits are comfortable as well. So getting out of a bad habit is super, super hard for everybody, but especially for someone that goes through life on these habits. And by the way, I do want to be clear that one habit I have is breaking away. So it doesn't mean that I'm like so regimented that I can't divert from a schedule, but I plan and I review my goals and objectives for myself every year. And then I'll modify, constantly iterate, and, you know, always looking, continuous improvement always of the process that I run through.
Yeah. So I know you're very process oriented, and that's something that's super important to you and has played a huge role in your success. I want to come back to that concept of breaking away, because I think that's something that is super important. And I want to come back to your concept of sort of like checklists. And one of the things that I know personally is that if I feel like I've got too much stuff going on, or I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, one of the things I'll do is I'll like stop, take a minute and clean off my desk in like a very literal sense. Like there's clutter around me, I can't take it. And I find that helps me to sort of clear things out from a mental perspective as well. And then I'm able to sort of refocus. And I think what's really cool that you mentioned with that sort of bankruptcy idea too, is just knowing that moment when you've got like too much on your plate and you've got too many priorities, too many things to check off the list, and you need to just reassess and come in and say, what are my priorities now? So I'd love to maybe hear a little bit more about like when you do feel that way, because I know as an entrepreneur, it's really easy to like sometimes get overwhelmed. Like you love it, but also it can be a lot. So what's one of the things that you do to try to like regain your focus when you find yourself like swimming a bit or just having too much going on?
Well, I like having priorities on my tasks, and I have tasks. I have one list of tasks that are personal and business, and that's like my day-to-day task list. And I'm very comfortable moving a task from one day to the next. And if I realize something's been there for weeks and it was something I wanted to get done in days, then I'll actually put on the front of it JFDI, so just F and do it. And that's, or I'll put the flame emoji as a kind of a reminder of like, gotta get this thing done. And we talked about time and place, T&P. So my business partner calls this important and urgent, like this kind of this like, you know, I and you. I'm more of a T&P, like a time and place for figuring things out. For sure. And then I also like to have a place for things to go. And this is true like in my dresser. So I have like a sock drawer, I've got a t-shirt spot, I've got my cycling clothes spot, I got my workout clothes spot, I've got my nicer, you know, muskox, you know, area for all
yes,
of that.
Love it.
So it's like, I like to keep things in a spot where I can go to physically and mentally. So, and digitally blends into both of those, of course. So that's kind of my methodology on this, is that I like to have a few places and always know where I can go to something. And sometimes I'll put something very much in like an agile development process. You have a backlog And sometimes something in the backlog just goes in another bucket I'll call later. And I'm working on a software project. So I think that those are some things that have helped me. And having time, I'll schedule time to do my spring cleaning. And that, like, knowing that I have time allocated to get through all of the miscellaneous items or a JFDI list, it's like, if I say, okay, I'm going to shut down every other window, like on this call now, I don't have any other windows open, my phone isn't silent. I think the only person that can break through to that would be like my emergency contacts. Like that, like I basically put myself in the right frame of mind, that right place and the right time to be able to handle that list.
So, what's important now?
That's another good one. Yeah, it's like acronym soup. So I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, for sure. I want to get your reaction on one quote. That is, how you do anything is how you do everything. What's your perspective on that?
I haven't heard that before. How you do anything is how you do everything. I think it's a good mantra, and it's an attitude. So I'll come back to that one with one that I go to a lot, which is from Earl Nightingale. He's has a famous quote about the scariest secret in the world. And it's the basic concept is that we are what we think about, and we become what we think about. So I guess my response to like everything and anything, I look at this as more as you get to decide what you do, and what you do is, in my opinion, way more important than how you do it. But there are limits to that. Like, you have to be doing things appropriately, but being able to get things done in business and life and treat people the right way while you're doing it, I mean, that's, some people would argue that how you do what you do is more important than what you do. And I don't really subscribe to that, but it becomes like a philosophical evening of conversation on a point like that. So I kind of look at this as like, if you know where you want to be and you know where you want to go, you have to just stay focused on that vision, and anything else that's in your way mentally during a pandemic, I mean, anything that's blocking you from that, you have to get those blockers out of the way in order to achieve that. And everything comes at a cost. And for example, like Brad, for me, I lost my 20s where everyone else was partying and having a good time. I was working my ass off. And when we sold the company, there were like childhood and college friends of mine, they're like, we aren't surprised. Like, they were not surprised at the least, because they knew that I was so damn serious where everyone else was just goofing around.
Right.
And, you know, that's a cost of doing it. So that's all I thought about was winning, and that's what I focused on. But to be clear, I think that having a good process, and there, I also have different levels of importance on different things that I do. So I don't need to be the best. I don't really want to be the best at everything. And there's the best, and there's another side of this is like being the best version of yourself. There's some things where I'm just like, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to take on a lot more. Now I'm just like, you know, I'll let an expert come in here and figure this out. And we have a mantra, we have a saying at our company, we want to hire people smarter than us. And it really makes our job a lot faster and more enjoyable, because we're working at an elite level and it's improving. So I know we're getting a little bit off that question, but I just want to put some color around this, that I think that from my standpoint, it's a little bit of a different view, and it's definitely not for everybody, but it certainly worked for me. But it's part of, again, what I said earlier about me being me, and you got to be you and do things your way.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And one of the things that you mentioned that I love is you got to get the blockers out of the way. And one of the things that I really believe is the actions that we take on a day-to-day basis are votes towards how we will define ourselves in the future. And to me, how we define ourselves is critically important. Let me unpack that a little bit. So if I wanted to be a runner, and I haven't run in 10 years, right? I actually have, but you know what I'm saying? Like if your goal was to become a runner and you've been sitting on the couch for a long time and you go out and you run around the block, you're not going to come back in and say, I'm a runner, right? But guess what? You've made a vote, a single vote, that you will identify yourself in the future as a runner. And then if you make another vote the next day and another vote the next day, and then fast forward and you run that 5K, and next thing you know, you're on a 10K, and then you run a half marathon, and then you run two over the course of 6 months. Now you're saying, I'm a runner. And I think that's like really powerful to know, like, hey, what's getting in my way? What are the blockers towards me being that person that I really want to self-identify as? Because I ultimately, it doesn't really matter what someone else self-identifies you as. Like, that shit doesn't matter. But how you identify, like, that really matters. And you can fool a lot of people, but you can't fool yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And I even go a step further. So I picked this up along the way. I got some advice somewhere on this. I don't know who to contribute to, but I didn't come up with this. Is that don't tell people what your goals are. Because it, by telling people what your goals are, it already makes you get the feeling, because they'll say, oh, that's great. Or yeah, you're a runner now in this example. Do it first and don't tell anybody. And it's beneficial for yourself. Not just that you won't fear failure. Some people say, well, if I tell people I'm gonna quit my job and start a company, or I'm gonna go invent something, or I'm gonna do this project, you end up getting a lot of the benefits of winning from telling people that you're doing something in the first place. So it's tough. And I'd say this isn't, I mean, I'm guilty of this sometimes, but I'll get involved in projects and I won't tell anybody about these projects. And then next thing you know, someone's like, wait a minute, what'd you do? And it's because I want to prove to myself that I'm capable of getting a win. When we have a new employee started our company, the first day on the job, he or she has a executable line of code or a project win or something that they can say that they did, because that's where it starts. It starts with getting very small wins.
Yes.
Whether it's on the football field, like when you, like the typical name one of 100 high school football movies talking about that inch, all the way to the boardroom, you got to make sure you can get wins early and continue stacking those up. So I look at this as like, don't tell people about what your goals are. Just write them down, keep them to yourself, and go get them. Unless that person is a blocker and you need to have them be unblocked to support. So, I mean, it could just be something as simple as like you're trying to make a decision about who you want to be when you grow up. And we ask this to every one of our staff members, whether they're out of college or they're, you know, in their 50s or 60s. It's like that, that same question, it changes. So I think that being able to find those wins and try some new things, it's going to empower you to take some risks and be able to differentiate between your dreams and goals. Dreams are great. You can always have them, but turning something into goals and something that's obtainable, that's really the difference between the two, from in my opinion.
Fantastic. I want to change gears a little bit here, and we'll go back to one of the things we mentioned earlier, which is breaking away. And this is an area where I think you just absolutely kick ass, which is you're obviously a successful professional, right? Doing your thing nowadays at Tome, and that's fantastic. We've all got our own, arena in which we're working on. But you're also really into biking, as evidenced by the bike. Nice muskox hat in the background for you. For those of you watching on video, you can verify that. Audio, I guess you'll have to take my word for it. But you're into biking. You're definitely into skiing, and that's something that you think you do really well. So how are you able to set aside time? Like, how do you transition from Jake the work guy to Jake on a bike, right? I mean, that's not easy to do for a lot of us. Like, it's a competitive world. We're so locked into what we're doing. Like, talk to me about how you're able to break away.
So as a passion cyclist and skier, I think that the old adage of entrepreneurs work half days, you just get to choose those 12 hours a day you want to work, certainly applies. The calendar, and going back to that we talked about earlier about process, my calendar is up to date all the time. Now, I'm not putting in like when I'm eating dinner or if I'm hanging out with some friends, unless it would be on top of like a work schedule or a day off. But having my time organized is very important to me. So in my calendar, I have my weekly group rides. I have when I go to the gym at noon on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the calendar. And I also have a pro tip I do where I have two meetings in the calendar. My meeting, which is actually when I'm working out, And then around that, I put a buffer meeting from 11:30 to 1 o'clock, which is my block time. So I have time to get there and then time to get home, eat, shower, and get back to work. So if someone's looking at my calendar, they know to, so to your question, Brad, is that when anyone on my team's looking at my calendar, they're going to know when I'm actually on a bicycle riding and I'm actually like in the gym, when I'm actually on the mountain skiing, when I'm actually on an airplane versus just kind of ambiguous time. If I don't put something on my calendar between 8:30 a.m. Eastern and 6, somebody else will. And that's just how it is. So you have to own your schedule and then be flexible to accommodate the needs of business. So I don't cancel bike rides, but I will reschedule them. And I think that with my brand of having a really high ratio of what I do versus what I say I'm going to do, knowing that I can deliver what my friends need, what my wife needs, what my business needs, I get that flexibility. And every once in a while, like we said again, like sometimes I just need to just get away. And I need to, like what you said, Brad, about reorganizing your desk. Sometimes if I have internal meetings and I tell people every once in a while, it's a great day outside, I just need to blow off the rest of the meetings today. That in a lot of companies means I'm no-showing them. But in our environment, it is a combination of like, fill me in and let me get back on this later. And I just need to take a safety break and get out there. So that's how I do it. And that can't work. So if you're listening to this and you've got a boss, probably won't work that way. But what can work for you is talking about some accommodation time in the schedule, especially around lunch, talking about a couple of days a week where you say like, hey, if you work a job that is in like that 8:30 to 5:30 block that most of us in the US are in our respective time zones, you can say, look, I'd like to start working at 6:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if possible, I'd like to shut it down at 3:30, 4 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays to shift the hours. If there's any team meetings or something, I can certainly accommodate and get those, but I'd like the opportunity to spend a little more time on me and put in the schedule. I would bet that unless your boss is a total jerk, that he or she would say yes to that. So like being able to, like the way I handle my calendar will not, in my opinion, not work for an employee. Even in my company, it would be kind of challenging, but you still have opportunities to do that. And the reason it works for me is because I'm willing to put in the amount of hours and volume that as an employee, you really shouldn't be. I would never expect my people to, my team to be doing that because they're not the owners. So there, I just want to delineate that there's a difference between what I do, but the reason out, the rationale and the reason why I still think can apply for people that are working on a team.
One of the things I love that people mention to us all the time is when we're flying, which is put the oxygen mask on yourself before assisting others. And I honestly think that's basically what you're doing when you're carving off time on your schedule, saying like, I'm going to the gym, I'm riding. It's like, hey, this is taking care of me and I got to take care of me in order to take care of the company, whether it's closing deals or thinking about our strategy or dealing with the many challenges that mm-hmm. exist out there. So I think that's definitely good advice. So got a couple final questions here before I let you go and wrap up. So real quick, I know you've got a lot of things you're dealing with on an ongoing basis and you deal with them fantastically, but what let's talk about some things that just set you off. Like what's your biggest pet peeve, Jake?
I think when people can't, they overcommit. So I talk about the say-do ratio, which actually officially be more like a do-say ratio, but you got to be doing what you say you're going to do. Just say no, people. If you're not going to do something, if it's showing up at a party, at a dinner, meeting for coffee, or hey, I'll call you next week, or I'm going to get this task done, just say no, I'm not going to do it. Don't say you're going to do it and then not do it, because it just drives me up a wall, and it probably drives your friends up a wall, and then that becomes your brand as the person that's always like, hey, yeah, we should get together for lunch, or yeah, I'm getting right on that. And then you do not want to be that guy.
100%. Kindness is honesty. Honesty is kindness. And I think so many people get this warped thing in their mind where it's like, oh, I don't want to be mean. I want to be rude. It's like, no.
Just set expectations.
Be honest.
Just say, like, I think that saying no more than you say yes is not a bad thing. If you're hearing this saying this might be me, try saying no 5 times in the next, this weekend. Say no 5 times, or just mark it on a piece of paper.
Love
and
it.
See what happens. You're not going to regret it.
I love it. I love it. Jake, you mentioned some advice you've gotten before. What's the best piece of advice that you've been given?
I think practically is knowing the difference when you're speaking to people. So saying the word I a lot more than you say the word you. When you say you statements, so Brad, you told me that we were going to be doing this call and this call is not what you said it was going to be versus Brad, I'm really excited to be on this call. I was expecting something slightly different, but I'm really happy to accommodate. So I don't know if there's any way we can discuss this, but you know, I just want to let you know how I feel. The I and you and understanding that you and puts people on defensive versus when you say I statements, it just really softens things up and everything in life. So that's something that my dad taught me and man, it helped. I mean, just sticking to I statements. Now, if you do it too much though, then it becomes like this like hypnosis style, like, you know, you're being salesiness. But generally speaking, if you've got an issue or even just want to communicate some feedback, like saying one of my mentors when he's like, hey, could I give you some constructive feedback? And finding that time one-on-one and letting them know, like letting the person know what you heard and how it made you feel and that it might have come off this way. And if it's I, then it just sort of softens it. So I think it's a great, great way of going about it. I use that all the time.
Couldn't think of a better way to end the podcast here today. Well, Jake, we really appreciate you being on. We appreciate you being part of the Muskox herd. We appreciate you wearing our flannels out in Colorado and skiing in the Rockies and freaking dominating the trees. Maybe sometimes poking holes in your coat. Got to fix it with duct tape. That's Muskox man in you right there.
Yeah, no, you gotta do you and. Thanks everyone for the time. Great being on the show. And you guys check the links to follow me and kind of keep in touch, but definitely down to just keep everybody moving forward. So appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Jake. And like you mentioned, we've got the links down below in the description so you can keep in touch with Jake Siegel, the OCD.
Oh yeah. Check out that blog. It's kind of wild. It's definitely on the fringe of what I'm into, but thanks again, Brad. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Jake. And that's a wrap for this episode of The Herd Has Spoken. Big thanks to Jake Siegel, CEO of Tome Software, for joining us today. Also the author of OCD CEO blog. You can check out the link to his blog in the description. If you enjoyed today's episode, it would be really helpful for us if you could like, subscribe, and comment on today's episode and on The Herd Has Spoken in general on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening to today's episode. Also, to learn more about Muskox, please visit our website, gomuskox.com, where you're going to find all sorts of fantastic outdoor apparel to help make sure you are ready for the next adventure. For The Herd Has Spoken, I'm Bradley Hoos.